This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. We speak with cutting-edge experts and wise elders from across the globe on the issues and action our Earth is calling for. Brought to you by the Terra Nova Foundation, driving environmental change through human connection and collective action.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. Today we are talking sustainability, the role of our business leaders, and also in our roles as parents, role models and influencers, what action can we take? In today's world, many of us are super busy and have little time to fit in our well-being activities, let alone start championing environmental issues, sometimes even sleep. We can be challenged by carrying a heaviness of the issues related to our earth. Sometimes without even realizing it. Climate, ecosystems, consumerism, pollution, changes in the biosphere, Antarctica melting in the winter, extreme events. We get these in the news daily, so it's no surprise that we have them in our heads and carry them daily. So how do we process all of this and deal with it? How do we, in our roles in society, in our homes, and in our businesses, do something that's impactful? How do we get our heads around whether we should join the sustainability mission or the regenerative approach? Or do we just protest to our governments? And how do we take action whilst managing our own well-being? Because if we're not in good shape, it's hard for anything else to be. So, let's start exploring these issues. And today we have the wonderful Galen Ochoa, who is an international environmental and behavioral change expert with a wealth of experience around the world. And we're so happy to have you in the studio this morning, G. Oh, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to kick off with, it can be a little bit of a contentious topic, this one. What is sustainability? Because this comes up for me quite a lot. People say, you know, the sustainability doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, it's kind of a word that's been so used as lip service or as part of a greenwashing campaign that we're not sure what it means. So you've got a lot of experience of using the word sustainability in practice and in theory. So let's kick it off. Well, how do you see sustainability, G?
Well, I love that you came from that angle because I try not to use it if I can't. And it's great to see certain countries like Australia, the ACCC has just come out with guidelines on greenwashing and sustainability messaging. And that's going to prevent a lot of businesses from overusing these terms because it really is creating misleading representations of what they're actually doing. And it's misleading consumers to thinking that separating their recycling, for example, and then washing that kind of stuff is really going to make a big difference. It is important to do because the single individual household doesn't have so much influence over the infrastructure needs that we really need to make actual changes for. But it's important that everyone's trying.
Yeah, totally. So let's go back to the first thing you said about business, right? So sustainability, the greenwashing bit. The other part of it is those who do really well on sustainability then get compared with those that are, you know, telling little lies every now and then, you know? Like, that's a problem too, right? How if you're doing great action, do you then say, well, I'm sustainable, but then someone over there is saying, but I'm sustainable?
It takes it away completely from the people that are, and that creates a big issue that consumers don't know any better, and they're putting their hard-earned money into products or services that they think are actually doing what they think are doing, but it actually isn't happening, and there's lots of examples here in New Zealand and overseas, actually. Actually, the same issues. I'll give you an example, actually. So with sustainable packaging, and I'm putting the air quotes here, or compostable packaging example is with PLA products that are used to ensure that the inside, the lining of the packages, like whether it's a coffee cup or your chip boxes, are hydrophobic. And so the oil doesn't leach through or the water doesn't go through, but it doesn't actually compost in your home compost.
Yeah.
Because it needs to reach over 60 degrees, you know, in terms of temperature, plus all these other things in order for that PLA, which is a type of polymerized lactic acid, in order for that to break down.
Yeah.
And in Canterbury, for example, we don't have a single facility that actually does this.
Yeah, right.
And you'll have all these packaging companies selling in Canterbury, saying all these things, consumers buying these things and actually having choices and will pay a bit more for the thing that they think is actually going to biodegrade, but it's not.
No, and some companies use these really tricky things, like they'll say natural fibers, but they won't say that the natural fibers aren't going to break down because it's now been joined up with a nice thin piece of plastic. So now it's not recyclable. It's not any of those things, right?
On that note, some of those products may not have PLA, but they might have PFAS in it.
Right.
And PFAS is even worse because that's a forever compound. And that's used in things like Teflon. And we've known for 60, 70 years that it's now in all of our blood.
Yeah, right. Totally. We can trace this, right? And it's quite grim, even in our children. We can trace these components that we've been using for a really long time, just weren't aware that it was not good for us, right?
Yeah.
So it makes it quite tricky because if you're I'm a consumer. I go to the shop. I want to buy something that I want is eco, but the product is telling me it's eco. Like, it sounds to me like I'd have to read so much research to work out whether it's actually eco or not. So, how do we deal with this? Do we choose alternatives, or do we just try and get far more knowledgeable about every single product on the market?
Yeah. Just hearing how this conversation's going, it is anxiety-inducing for a lot of people. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, and for even some top business decision makers, I've spoken to, you know, directors and boards here in New Zealand, and I've had some of them come up to me, and these are civil servants who are chairs of boards, for example, that will say, oh, sustainability's bullshit. I'm so sorry. is rubbish. But it's a loaded sentence because for them, what I hear from that, and this is just applying empathy for them, they've tried, they don't see how it can work, they realize that it's actually above their pay grade because it's a systemic issue that they're facing. They go, man, what are we doing? What am I doing? What can my company even do?
Yeah, what's the point?
Drop in the bucket. And we're not even the ones importing this stuff. It needs to change in China or Australia or wherever that we're importing these things. And New Zealand only has 5 million consumers.
Yeah.
You know, so the realistic influence that we have across the supply chain is not very much.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's incredibly important that the government instills principled leadership in their diplomacy, but also in their trade missions.
Yeah, right.
You know, and work together with Australia or something to sort of resolve this systems-wide, because you talk to business decision makers here in New Zealand, a lot of them are just jaded.
Yeah, right.
They think the whole thing is rubbish, and then it affects their financial bottom line, and they can't grow the company or whatever. Yeah. And they don't have the capacity to make some of those decisions.
And I think now people are getting a bit more savvy and saying, actually, whether we have just a natural fiber in one of our products is really not the issue. And it's certainly not going to make that impact. So I think for a lot of people now in business, sustainability is starting to take on a bit more of a significant role rather than the kind of what I call, you know, mending around the edges. And this is, to me, is a really great thing, because we don't want just little superficial things. And that can be expensive for a business to even try anyway. So actually, why don't we wheel back a bit and start to say, as a business, is my business okay? What we're making, what services we are providing, is that ultimately sustainable? Now, this is where we start to actually look at the value of the word sustainability. And with Terra Nova, we talk regenerative rather than sustainable, because regenerative is talking about actually having a surplus. You give back every time you make something rather than extract and take from the planet. So what are the things you've been involved with things around the world, right? So what are some of the businesses that you've seen some really great practice with? Have you seen some really great value-based practices that businesses have chosen to take on?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of examples there. But just to give some context, like sustainability is how you do things. Because businesses, governments, INGOs, they all exist to solve a problem. Like we pay money or taxes or donate because we expect those organizations to help somebody or help the planet or solve a bit, even get us some windows or whatever. We have a clear problem that we need them to solve for us. But just by existing, they create all these other issues, right? What do we do with the offcuts of the glass or on the wood or on these things? Oh, but we need to double glaze homes so that they're warmer in winter for poorer families, right?
There's
clear reasons why we need products. But because they create all these other issues as they operate, they're left with a bit of a conundrum because, well, hold on, like businesses feel attacked when they say, why aren't you being more sustainable? It's like, well, I haven't been taught how to be sustainable. It's not in school. I don't know how to make it work, man. I just know how to, my apprenticeship told me how to put like windows into a home and nothing else. So we're not really preparing people for it. And I think it's important to offload a lot of that defensive or negative energy around it just to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's been a common theme all around the world in places that I've seen. And an example was, and this is an example in Cambodia, this is the biggest telco. They're called Smart and from the Axiata Group. And it was the CEO that decided that they wanted to be more sustainable. So they weren't mandated by policy. It wasn't a compliance thing. It was the CEO coming out of a conference one day. And then he walked up to the sea and then he saw rubbish everywhere.
Yeah.
And remember, like a lot of countries export their rubbish to places like Thailand, Cambodia, like these sorts of places.
Right.
And so they don't talk about carbon like we do. Because our waste is sent over there.
Yeah.
We kick the can into their yard.
Yeah.
And they have the carbon issue as well. So he looked at the rubbish and then he noticed, like, man, there were like SIM cards from his company there. And he was like, this is not okay.
Yeah, right.
This is terrible. Like, we're going to have to make a change. And from there, they started their journey. And it was great that that leader had some principles and decided to roll model that and say, this is not okay. We actually need to make some of these changes. And brought us on board to help them go plasticless.
Yeah, right.
And one of those things was we had this long consultation period because it's a huge organization. You know, they did all sorts of things. But one of the activities was just to go use refills because there's a lot of little, and I think this is what people don't misunderstand, is there's a lot of little things that you can do that can have greater impact than what you realize.
Yeah.
And one of the things that were refilled were like their, and this is during lockdowns and stuff, so they had to buy heaps of hand sanitizer, disinfectant, and things, and we found a local supplier that was buying locally that had an EV that produced locally and that was using natural products. Some things were imported, like their alcohol. You need that and your sanitizer, of course.
Yeah.
But everything else, like the aloe vera, all that stuff was grown in Cambodia.
Yeah.
Whereas previously, they were buying all the stuff from China, importing it, and not really knowing
where it's coming
where
from.
Where it's coming from and all these things. And so they swapped, and it was for like the same price.
Yeah, right.
But they had to be intentional about it. They didn't know it was there because no one was looking because no one thought about it.
Yeah.
And so when you put sustainability objectives down and think, well, let's get started, and let's actually just map out what our current impact is.
Right.
And then we can start to identify things that, oh, like, man, that's a quick fix, changing the supplier for this, and it's not even costing us any more money. So for them, they were able to swap that supplier, and it was for the same price.
Yeah.
And it almost eliminated their single-use packaging because we were talking hundreds of bottles of sanitizer were being used there nationwide. And in that one decision, in the next month, they swapped. And so instead of single-use packaging, they were reusing those bottles. Yeah. There were some other challenges, and this is where the people part of it comes into play.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the bottles were being stolen. So they had to keep replacing
it. That's a bit trickier.
It is trickier, but the thing is it was being phased down. So after, I think, the first round in that first month, something like 80 bottles disappeared.
Yeah.
And so the refillery had to repurchase these bottles. And then but that number gradually went down to something like 10, 15%. And then 5%.
Right.
Yeah, so eventually they were able to refill almost all of their bottles.
And this is the thing about this, is there is no perfect. I think quite a few businesses feel the pressure to have a perfect rollout, and they want to to have this amazing, you know, we are green or we are sustainable or we are a regenerative company. You don't need to be perfect. In fact, if the more honest you can be, the better, because your consumers will know, you know, they'll feel it at the very least. But they will, if you're overclaiming, it's never a good, it's never a good time.
Yeah.
You pay for it either immediately or somewhere down the track. So way better to go, we're trying, we're doing our best, this is what we're doing, and paint that journey, because then that's reality. That's, you know, you don't feel like you've got this massive facade of a business saying, we're amazing. and that's, you know, especially in the sustainability area, it's kind of like, well, you know, they're big shoes to fill if you're going to claim you're a sustainability leader, right?
Yeah.
So in a way, I guess leaders aren't the people saying they're amazing. They're the people going, this is tough.
Real leaders.
Yeah, exactly. Real.
Because there's a lot of leaders in leadership positions. They're leaders too.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't mean the title necessarily, right? It's actually the action that's being taken. And that's, I find that quite interesting too, is you asking about the question, just asking the question. For most of the businesses that we work with Terra Nova, they want to do something. They just don't even know which questions to ask, right? So what would you say are some of the questions that are really good questions for a business to ask?
Have you heard of KPQs?
KPQs.
Yeah.
Tell me KPQs.
Key performance questions.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... It's like, is this a product?
No,
okay, switch into...
I mean, this is something everybody
performance.
Can do.
Here we go.
Yeah, well, because everyone knows what KPIs are, key performance indicators, and
totally.
Their metrics to figuring out how on track you are. But you're right about the questions. And you can formulate them by asking, to what extent or how well are we... doing so-and-so. So to what extent is our organization ensuring, you know, our waste is being diverted from landfill or minimizing and eliminating our waste?
Yeah, sure.
As an example. And then when you ask that question, you go, well, actually, what waste are we creating? Because it starts, when you ask a really great question, it starts making you realize how much you don't know.
Yeah.
And you keep asking more questions instead of having suddenly arbitrary KPIs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're not answering the right question, you're going to get a whole bunch of random numbers that you're not even sure how to use.
Oh, well, and you can be entirely successful if you write the right KPIs and not be at all.
Yes, no, exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and so every quarter, and this is what our organizations do, or when we work with people, it's to ask them, well, to what extent are we doing so-and-so at this time? You know, so it's being smart about the question, S-M-A-R-T, that's what I mean by smart, and the KPIs, and so that they start realizing, they start taking, because you're forced to take a big step back and really reflect on where you actually are.
And that's the bravery bit, right? So, because leaders are courageous, that's, I think, is one of the most defining characteristic of a leader is courage.
Yeah.
It's great when people are really articulate and do amazing speeches, but it's the courage and action, I think, is a real leader. And it starts with the question. You don't ask the question, you don't get the answer. You can stay ignorant, right? That's not courageous.
Yeah.
The bravery is in that question.
That's right. And when you start asking those questions and you realize that your KPIs aren't, or what you thought were good metrics are not, serving you.
Yeah.
And then that's where the courage comes in to say, well, this is being honest with it, having the courage to be honest with yourself and saying, well, this is not working.
Yeah.
How do we make it work then? And actually going to ask for help.
Yeah. And that, the other really wonderful playthrough of that is that often in businesses, it's someone down the hierarchy that's given the sustainability job.
Yeah.
And that person, I often speak to these people, right? And they often feel disempowered because they've been given this job that's really worthwhile and they've gone into it thinking they're going to change the world and how amazing this business is going to be. But they're not in a position of decision-making power in that organization. So they're constantly trying to convince the people that are above them, you know, or in terms of the hierarchical structure. So you take away that awful feeling for that person in that position if you as the business leader asks the question, because that person now with that role feels like, oh, it is actually important. I can bring an answer to you and help you go through that process. Mm-hmm. Have you found the same thing?
Yeah, I think what we're going to see in terms of sustainability moving forward, because it is about how you do things. And if they don't have any decision-making autonomy or real strong advisory positions, and there's a culture of feedback and accepting advice to change things, then there is not going to be any real change. And we're going to find that sustainability professionals are not just people doing stuff in the organization. They're working with everybody because it's about how you do things. That means everybody, waste as an example, everybody has rubbish bins in their offices, on site facilities, you know, or in their vehicles or whatever. And unless everybody is on the same track, you're going to get waste contamination. You're going to get it not separated right. Or in terms of procurement, you know, you're not going to be using necessarily the right suppliers. You could be designing waste out of your system just like that telco.
Yeah.
They said, well, we're not going to have any waste because we've just eliminated packaging for these several products that we're having to use, and they don't even have it. So that's the waste hierarchy. So sorry, just coming right back to that question that you asked about consumers and supermarkets needing to suddenly learn a degree's worth of information to buy their chips. You're right, though. We're in the middle where there is a gap. I'm starting to see a bit more leadership, and that's because we're phasing out old leaders. We're phasing out people who couldn't make those decisions, didn't want to make those decisions, with people who can, and they're slowly getting into positions of power.
Yeah.
And hopefully more of them doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And so we're going to... And that's why Australia, you'll see they've got these policies. I think we've just drafted one in New Zealand as well. So we'll see hopefully less of that greenwashing. And I'll give you an example here. Can I name and shame? A little bit?
Well, go for it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, their ads are everywhere. So you'll see like on YouTube, a major drinks company will have ads before the video, for example. And they'll tell you how they're circular, or what's the word? It was that their bottles could be used again and again and again.
Right.
Well, those bottles are made out of PET.
Right.
Right. And so there's plenty of research out there now that shows that if it's not stored correctly, for example, that there's leach into it. And we don't want that. And we've all known this for years. All these decision makers have known it for a long time.
Yeah.
And the other thing with PET is that it's not circular because it requires virgin plastic to sustain its structure.
Yeah, and this is the problem with plastic, right? Plastic is still plastic.
Yeah.
So when we're producing, using, and getting rid of plastic, it's a problem. It doesn't matter what kind it is. There is less damage depending on the type of plastic, but it's problematic no matter what it is. So the more we can not use it, and it's incredible, the impact of plastic, because it's in the production of it. Fossil fuels, hello. The whole process of storing it and getting it to a shelf, that's problematic. Then people use it, throw it out. It's then polluting. You know, the whole part of it has this huge, huge impact, which we don't really measure. We measure kind of bits and pieces.
And it's all based on markets. Do you want to hear something really sad? Actually, there's a bit more on that with PET, because like here in New Zealand anyway, like because we're so small, we don't collect enough of these commodities. So how the waste sector works is that everything's market driven. Like we have a capitalistic market, right? And so why we recycle is, and how we recycle is because someone is willing to buy that, our waste, let's say. Let's keep the PET, for example.
Sure.
The plastic bottles. And so those commodity markets need them in huge volumes. So in Christchurch, for example, we can take, or we can sort out clear PET, but you can't take any other bottles because the way plastic is recycled is that it needs to be separated by its resin or its strength and its color, because someone down the track, a factory, has to buy that. Right. And they don't want the mixed stuff, or else everything's just going to be gray or beige.
And no one wants to buy products that color.
But that means that all these collection companies have to sort it out. And like your Sprite bottle is different to your Mizone bottle, is different to all these LMP. Yeah. And so you see these bottling companies starting to shift to clear PET.
Yeah.
But as we're phasing out,
there's all this other stuff which isn't actually being recycled because no one wants to store it. Who's going to store? Who's going to pay for that?
Yeah, and more and more countries who were taking waste are saying no now. They've got so much that their country is so polluted that there's this like no. So now countries are going, way, that's not cool. We have to deal with our own waste. That's a problem now, which is good because it brings it home. But I think that lots of people. Reactions are, we've got to recycle more. No. No, we do need to recycle, sure. But we need to not stop making stuff that even needs to be recycled, in this way. We need to start really thinking about what we're buying and if we really need to use plastic. Sometimes plastic is totally needed. Sometimes it saves someone's life, right? The use of a plastic item.
Well, especially in healthcare. I think you need single-use things like needles and stuff like that to begin with. But even then, there's work being done in that area.
We have some amazing... we have got a student at one of our universities here has come up with a way to reuse the syringes, which is incredible. Recycle parts of it. But there's all sorts of ideas that can come for those that we really need. But it's the stuff that we don't need that we... And that's where the bulk of the plastic is. It's kind of quick and easy, accessible. Let's just grab that plastic bottle of water. Now, we're lucky. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, we have incredible water for the best part. Of the country. So we can, most households in this country can turn on the tap and fill whatever type of container, water bottle, jar, whatever it is, but definitely a cup. And so we don't need to do that. So it's just effort on our part to always make sure we have a container with us so we don't need to use anything else. That might not be true everywhere. But this is the point. This is when, to your point about the questions, key questions, what is it that you can actually do? What is in your control? How can you redesign things so that you phase out using stuff like plastic? Now, one of the things I'm really keen for you to talk about, because some of this can feel like, how am I going to do without plastic? And actually, we do have, with Terra Nova, we have an EcoFit community, which is where you can join up and get inspired by actions to take. And one of the little challenges we've got is go without plastic for a week. Mm. And people go, whoa, they move away from the table and they go, could I do that? Oh, I wonder if I could do that, which is like crazy, right? But it's good because for a week you have to work out, you have to do some planning. But I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on what we as humans in our roles, in our places of influence, whether we are in a business, own a business, or even just as parents and or friends and, influential in our society in some way. What are the key things that we can do, do you think, taking into account whatever hat or hats we have on?
Mm. Well, firstly, for everybody is to learn a little bit more about what's available to us. But role modeling is incredibly important because you spoke about all these different decision makers in their whatever social circle or context that they have, they're all role models of some form.
Mm.
And I'm just thinking that that's a big question.
It is a big question.
Because
I was going to say that the part of the context of me asking that is quite often people go, oh, Rhodes, you're doing a great job doing that environmental thing. And it's like, whoa, it's not my environmental thing. It's our environmental thing. And I've simply made the decision to go there and do as much as I can. That's it. I did zoology at university and I have a background in that bit. But my first conscious decision was, what can I do? And then go forward, right? And what skills do I have? And then I met all these amazing people like here in the studio, like I can do a podcast now and talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
But we all have that capacity to do something.
Yeah, well, let's break it down then.
Yeah.
Let's we have some time. Let's why not tackle this in that way? Yeah. If you're an adult and you're above 18 and you can vote, vote. Because this is where
This is applying the Pareto rule, the 80-20 rule, where 20% of something that you do can have 80% of the impact.
Yeah.
It's policy.
Yeah.
Because why big companies in New Zealand who export are forced to change, report on their climate reporting, change their waste providers, upgrade their fleet, put in solar, all these things that they're doing is because their buyers in Europe are forcing them to do that.
Yeah.
And then there's a trickle-down effect because these small businesses who are contractors for big companies are then forced to change because they're saying, well, we have to report on what we're doing and we have to put our money where our mouth is or else we can't export millions of dollars worth of stuff.
So
we have to make that change.
I guess we should be send out a big gratitude to everyone in Europe who's insisted that our products are of a certain quality, right?
Yeah, well, we as voters haven't been intentional about that. That's the reality. The reason why big companies in New Zealand are changing isn't because of leadership. It's because our customers are making us do it.
Yeah, right.
You know, so we do really have to thank the Europeans for the change that's going on here. And I'll give you some example of why I say that. Is because New Zealand's still the only country in the OECD that doesn't have a national e-waste program. Yet we are one of the worst producers of e-waste per capita.
Right, okay.
Right? There's lots of these little examples. We don't have an EPR, which is an extended producer responsibility scheme, which is where it's like stewardship, right? So if you're buying something, if you're selling, manufacturing, producing, and bringing a certain product into New Zealand, they're not collecting a part of that revenue, part of that money that goes into a pool that will treat that waste in New Zealand or whatever that it is that we're doing.
Yeah.
Japan did that in 2001. The EU did that in 2003. It's 2023. And we are just figuring out six priority things that we're looking at. And the tires will come out first. We'll still talk at e-waste. And that will be probably coming out in 2025. Yeah. We are really, really behind.
Yeah, right.
You know, and yet overseas, we have this amazing clean green image, which as a Kiwi, I'm a Kiwi. I don't sound it, but I'm a Kiwi. But I've benefited from that so much.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll go overseas and I'll be doing whatever expatriate work that I'm doing. And then I'll have the governor of Kuwait, you know, come and talk to me because I'm ethnically Chinese, assuming that I was a waiter or something. And then when I open my mouth, he's like, oh, where are you from? Oh, New Zealand. And then he will just, oh, I love Lord of the Rings. Your country's so clean and green. I love this. I love this. I love your honey.
Yeah.
And it's like we're banking on Sir Peter Jackson. We're banking on the All Blacks. We're banking on whether you love her or hate her, Jacinda. We're banking on Helen Clark. We're banking on all these people that have done great things for the country.
Yeah.
And we're exporting. And all these Kiwis who travel benefit from that brand. Can you imagine traveling as another country, I probably can't say it in this podcast, but that's not New Zealand, and we're greeted so well because of this image that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when we come home, we're not doing half of these things. Like our waste sector is a cowboy market.
We've talked on previous podcasts about our ecosystems here. We've got an incredible. As a country, we have some of the most amazing remains of Gondwana, the original, you know, separation of the lands into the continents. And so we have a lot of indigenous flora and fauna that you can't get anywhere else in the world, and they're disappearing.
Yeah.
So we have got this huge task to deal with that, which not everyone's aware of. So anyone visiting New Zealand, please help our conservation effort, because we definitely need it. And it looks so beautiful. But of course, it's a lot quieter, and there's a lot more pollution that's not seen, and you know. So we've got these international issues
and chemicals in place. I remember driving in the 90s, and your windscreen would be covered in bugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do they go?
Yeah, that's the example I use in terms of invertebrates, right? So insects have rapidly declined, and so we need to do something about that. This is international, though, right? New Zealand's no exception, I think, is the point. So that is definitely a big issue, but we do need to do a lot more. I think we are very well intentioned as a people, but it was interesting when you were talking about that before, about guardianship. And of course, I immediately go to Kaitiakitanga, which is often the people translate the Maori word as guardianship. It's a bit deeper than just simply that. But we have this amazing indigenous people that is New Zealand, right? So the Maori is the love of people in New Zealand, that beautiful culture that we have that says all of this. So we kind of live in this two-dimensional world, right? On the one hand, we are quite flippant about what we're making, and, you know, someone has to tell us off. But on the other hand, we have this deep connection with our land and water. And then, of course, there's everybody in between as well. So it is an interesting time to actually start to tackle this and go, well, who am I in this picture? You know, am I this end, that end, somewhere in the middle? So one of the things I'd like to really get you to dive into is, if I'm at home, I have one son who does ask a lot of great questions, keeps me on my toes all the time. How can I role model? How can I best, you know, is it just talking to him and telling him about it? Is it talking to my colleagues and saying, this is the situation, this is what we can do? Like, what do you think has been most influential when you've been working with businesses and with businesses are people, so that's just clarify that. Yeah. It's they're humans.
Well, this is a message that I've been going around the world, like from Poland to Cambodia to here, talking about, is that, well, parenting is the single greatest blockage to sustainability.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Because a lot of the decision makers that we have, whether in a community or in business or in government, don't have the emotional capacity to mediate short-term tactics with their long-term strategy, deal with all the interruptions that happen in their day-to-day, whether it's in big business or whether it's there's a lockdown or, I don't know, whatever it is that's going on, to deal with those interruptions. And then all the far away to the left or to the right are their values. And having to make those sort of decisions and then trying to, like, figure that out. And then get rid of whatever judgment or deal with the judgment that they have on themselves. There's so much there. And so a lot of people end up just going for what's in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, whatever's quick or whatever their immediate mental or emotional resources.
Yeah.
And those are 21st century skills to make courageous decisions, to empathize for other people, to empathize for the environment.
Yeah.
To think long term and go, well, actually, what do I want my grandkids to do? Because I've grown up playing around in this lake. Well, this lake might not be here anymore.
Yeah.
Or these insects that I used to look at through the magnifying glass are gone because they're not there anymore, because I, for whatever reason, have made certain decisions that will impact the bottom line, or because I'm just tired, I'm at the supermarket, I'm just going to get this thing and this thing and this thing and then just go home. It's really tiring for young parents to guide, instill that role model, to create a situation where children can have that space of awe and to fall in love with the environment. You don't have to shove this stuff down their throat.
No.
And that's not where, and as a behavior change person, that's not going to work. That's not sustainable and that's not meaningful for them, because they have to interpret that for themselves.
Yeah.
And so just spending time with your children and taking them for hikes, going to the beach, and when you're there with them, looking at the holes in the beach and going, hey, let's dig a hole. What do you think's in there?
Yeah.
You know, and just asking them questions and then letting them go, I don't know. Do you want to look?
Yeah.
You know, and figure that out. You know, like I took the kids to the Innovation Expo, and just the wonder on their face when they were looking at tablets with the AR. And I know that moments like that is going to make them think, maybe I can go into STEM.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can go into geography or whatever, because I'm at the forest with my dad and I love foraging for mushrooms or whatever. Yeah. That creates love for the environment, love for other people.
And it's, you know, at the same time, our well-being is improved, you know, just it gives and gives and gives when you connect with nature, really.
So that was the answer, that instilling some change or seeding meaningful change in young people is just giving them space to be there, but also being really present with them. So getting off your phone, you know, you know that already. Like, get off your phone, be with your kid, and actually be with your kid. Yeah. And don't shove stuff down their throat. Just let them be and just ask questions and see what they say. And as a young parent, there's so much self-management and emotional regulation that you got to do, because you sometimes want to do stuff for them. But the reality is that
these things that we're talking about to make those big decisions in the future,
yeah.
firstly, they have to have shared some of those values.
Yeah.
Then the other part is actually, how do you hold that space and how do you make those decisions? Well, that's empathy, courage, emotional regulation, self-management, and that's yeah. all developed in the formative years of a child's growth.
Yeah, right.
Before you're four. I mean, Gabor Mate says, what, the first 1,000 days?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when you're four, or other people say before you're seven.
Yeah.
And those are such important years. Well, young parents are typically the ones that are in incredibly important times in their careers.
Yeah.
They're in their mid-20s, their early 30s, or even up to their 40s now.
Yeah.
And that's where they have to earn all that money. They have a mortgage. Mm. Their kids' fees are expensive here.
Yeah.
Dental. There's so much stuff. And you as a parent, you have your own fees and things that you got to pay for and got to save up for. And then there's a lot of judgment.
Yeah.
There's already enough self-judgment as a parent that you have to go through. It's like, am I being a good enough dad or mom or all this stuff? And then you look at social media and life is perfect for other people. And then you could be in the supermarket and you get eyes, people rolling their eyes at you because your child's chucking a tantrum or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. that whole
if
village.
If you're in that situation, chill, man, because every parent has had that moment. So, but yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
And it's no surprise that we feel knackered and super, super tired is what I mean by knackered. And really fatigued and really want to, you know, just sit down and do nothing when we get home because we're so, you know. It's not just the physical running around and doing stuff. It's the headspace, you know. I've got all of this and I'm trying to do to be a good person, you know. And the reality is a good person's just a decent person, which comes back to your values, right? Empathy. What were the other ones you had? Empathy, courage.
Courage or compassion,
yeah.
you know, and all these important things that we talk about are the themes of all these great movies.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
We don't necessarily do them.
And they don't. The reality is this is over time, right? So sometimes we feel pressure every day to do something.
Mm-hmm.
This is that's not realistic. So I think when it comes to some of the eco or environmental action we're asking for, it can be just simply, it could be taking your kid outside this afternoon, and even if it's cold, you know, get outside and just hunt for, you know, the biggest insect you can find.
Yeah.
It can be as simple as that. Or getting it,
your
getting
own
some mud.
Curiosity, you know?
Yeah.
Because your kids can see it on your face.
Yeah, yeah.
You're saying, let's look for the biggest one. Or, hey, guys, let's actually look for one.
Yeah,
and then you Google and they see you Googling and they go, oh, dad or mom are actually looking it up because they don't know either.
Yeah. Well, this is, I did marine biology, and my son honestly knows way more about marine biology now than I can remember because he's had these amazing programs on TV that he's watched, and he absorbs everything. So that's the other thing. We try and get library books out, and so he wants to read what his mates are reading or whatever, but I deliberately will get a different book. That he wouldn't choose, that just has interesting facts, you know, or interesting things that are in there for him to look at that is to do with with nature. It can be as simple as that, just really energizing people in that
Your
way.
Your son, was it?
Yeah.
You're very lucky, but to be living in New Zealand, but his mother doing that.
Yeah, but, you know, a library, you know, a lot of places around the world have libraries. It's something accessible, you know, so even if you have not got... if you've not got nature around you, then it's like bringing nature in, but not necessarily having to be, you know, intense on a screen. It can be just a book, you know, that you take back. But the other thing I think is I just translate this to business. You know, get your staff outside.
Yeah.
It's going to do them better. They're going to make better decisions.
It
connects.
I was going to say they understand their role according to strategy a little bit better.
Mm.
So if in your strategy there are sustainability or sustainable environmental or social sustainable like objectives and you do bring them out and you say, well, this is important to us. And so when you're going to do your vetting for our suppliers to make sure they're actually treating their team members well and for buying from them, let's actually go and do that.
Yeah.
And you send them across and not just say, just call them. No. I want you to go and do a visit.
Yeah.
So you engage your curiosity and everything. They see, wow, this is actually really important for the company.
And it builds a relationship too. It's human to human rather than just, shutting off that connect. Yeah, no, very, very cool. You can, and it's amazing seeing when businesses do connect on a human level. It seems so basic, but it really, the whole organization starts to flourish, and people feel like their business is meaningful. And we really have seen a trend worldwide of people leaving companies because they don't get that feeling. It's the biggest workforce shifts now is to get to work. Look, people looking for places where they feel like they are contributing in some way.
Yeah. Well, from a big picture perspective, I think, and this is, I'm not sure if your audience is going to want to hear this, but like, we are seeing that pendulum flip back the other way a little bit because of all these redundancies that have been happening. Like, and that started with what, tech sector last year, like 100,000 jobs.
Yeah.
And that going, and now managers are being a lot more strict about how people are working.
Well, we'll have to talk about this another time, because one of the things, of course, is that businesses, which we haven't talked about today, are much likely to be resilient going forward if they are bringing in the earth component or the environmental component because of all of these extreme events, because we're moving well out of an extractive phase of this, thankfully, of this planet, and moving into a much more sustainable, if not regenerative phase, where those who can get resources much more circular and looped in are going to survive. I mean, this is the reality. We're not going to just be able to blatantly take. So hopefully that flip will just move into those companies surviving are going to be really, really amazing. But let's leave that for another day, because one of the things I wanted to kind of end with is we're looking now, I was saying a 10-year window of opportunity, but I'm bringing that back to 5 years now. So there is a bit of urgency on the table. So if you, let's do two scenarios. One, if you're a parent at home, and the other, if you're a business leader, what's one thing that you would do today, like a must-do for, to make a difference for this window of opportunity?
Oh, man. Well, just top of mind, and I have not really thought through that question, but just top of mind.
It doesn't have to be the best thing. It's just
Well, I started a worm farm with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, because, like, food waste isn't something that we deal with very well in New Zealand. We think we do, but we don't really. And that's because there's a lot of contamination.
Right.
Like, a lot of people putting compostable packaging into the green bin, and then most places won't take it because it's not actually compostable on those sites.
Right.
And so a lot of it goes to landfill.
Yeah.
Or it contaminates the thing. And then the products that these composters are selling, well, they can't sell because farmers won't buy it.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember how I said, like, the plastic, everything's all commodity markets?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so if they can't offload it, then they don't want it.
Yeah, so back it goes into landfill.
Back it goes into landfill, or just sits there and rots. So you start a worm farm. And that was just something that I enjoyed doing with the kids, and the kids learned about it. And worms are fantastic, right? We need worms for
so cool creatures.
For soil. Yeah. And then you learn, actually, just by seeing if your worms survive, you're forced to learn a lot about what should or shouldn't go into the soils. And then you go, oh, my God, there's all this stuff about pH and all these things, which I learned at school, which I have to apply now. But it also changes how you do things a little bit. But just know that your purchasing power is important, and there are other outlets for you to get your groceries from, for example.
Yeah.
That you don't have to get from the big two.
Yeah, yeah.
So in New Zealand. So and even overseas, so if you can, the more you can do at home, the better. And if you've got children, it's even better to engage them in it, because then they start doing things with you. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, well, it's a joy. It's, we need more joy. We definitely need more joy. And so I was living in London, I used to have, it was like a 30 centimeter, windowsill. And even in that 30 by 30 centimeter, even in that little windowsill, I could have three pots, right? Mm. I could grow three things. So that's what I used to do. It was partly, keep my sanity by having green in there. But there's opportunity no matter where you live.
Actually, on that note, can I take back what I just, I think starting a worm farm is great, but probably the most important thing that you can do is self-reflection.
Yeah, right.
Because it's designing around yourself.
Yeah.
To if you know that you are hungry at a certain time of day or whatever, and you don't want to buy a coffee with a takeaway cup, then you purchase a reusable and you keep one in your office or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where you design around your current habits and behaviors for you and your family.
Yeah.
In order to design waste out of your day to day. So that's probably the most impactful thing that you do, because it's little things that you do and then you end up working around your habits.
And this is a little bit of prep, right? A little bit of before work to then make your whole week.
Do you mind if I share an example with you on that? Actually, and this is an example in Cambodia where, like, in 2016, there was a very shameful moment for the country because they have the water festival where they do these dragon boat racing competitions on the Mekong. And for 3 days, there was, like, rubbish all along the riverbanks, and the waste management company of the city, they swept it into the river every single night.
Right.
And we looked at a 60,000 square meter space, and 95% of that was food packaging.
Wow.
And so instead of coming in and saying, hey, like, you know, expat hero mentality, we said, why don't we just study it and run a social experiment to see how we can design that out.
Right.
So we gave ourselves sort of like a 10-year period to have no litter at these festivals. And so we ran Cambodia's biggest food festival as a social experiment for waste management.
Nice.
And so we journey mapped to sort of work around the waste journey. And then I'll give you an example. Just one of these areas, we did like a what if exercise. And that's where packaging turns into waste, where people are sitting, right? So that's where they unpack and they eat, and then it becomes waste. And so half of the event was tables and chairs, and the other half was picnic mats.
Yeah.
And on the picnic mats, we had 95% less litter than on the tables and chairs, all things equal. Same amount of bins, same amount of volunteers.
Wow, that's interesting.
So on the second day of the festival, we thought, well, tables and chairs aren't going away. Why don't we put more bins? Let's take half of the bins and the volunteers to the tables and chairs and see what happens. We still had 95% less litter on the picnic mats, right? And so what we did was we found a way, because it was cheaper to use the picnic mats, because we went to the local pagodas, gave them an offering. They gave the picnic mats for free.
Yeah, sure.
Tables were $15 per table and $1 per chair per day.
Yeah.
Right? And so we gave those insights to the city council. They ran the event. And within 3 years, we had 90% less litter.
Whoa.
Because we designed it around people's current behaviors.
Nice.
Instead of forcing them to change, we said, why don't we just work around them? We worked around them and
effortless.
The results were there. It was a lot more effortless. Yeah.
That's nice.
That's all reflection, knowing yourself and working around yourself to get to where you want to be. That's probably where you're going to get more immediate impact than anywhere
else. That's cool. So that makes those questions totally critical then. Yeah. You know, like looking, oh, could we have done this better? What, instead of like dealing with the issue at the end, going, could this issue not exist?
Yeah, well, and starting with from a place of no judgment.
Yeah.
And so if you can, because that's key, or else you step off on an angry foot or a guilty foot, and then you take decisions which end in dissonance, not resonance.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want to get to where you want to be.
Yeah.
Not, oh, I want to avoid that, because all you think about is what you should be avoiding, as opposed to thinking about, well, actually, that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
So let's start there, and let's try and have a happy process around this.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's one of the things in this whole climate environment space is we have a tendency to blame others or to feel bad to the point where we're like, oh, we don't know where to start. Just put that to the side and just go, right, deep breath. What can I do?
Yeah.
You know, what could we tackle? And it'll make a big impact and I'll feel good. What could we do? How can we think creatively? And then go outside to be creative. Because you're going to probably be more creative if you're out in nature.
Absolutely. Yeah. You need that. You feel good and then you do good things.
It's very cool. Oh, it's been a pleasure having you in the studio today, G. Wonderful things. We touched on so many issues that we probably could do a whole podcast out of one. But it's wonderful to have had you in here. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way? Is it perhaps through LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn.
So we on Terranova Podcast, we are on the Plains FM website, but we're also on Spotify and on Apple. Go to the links there for Galeno Tour, most known as G.
Yeah.
And you can connect with him, particularly if you're looking at some of the actions you want to take as a business leader. He'll be very happy to engage with you. And we'll have all the links to the references we've made through this podcast on the Terranova website. That's terranova.foundation. Thanks again, G. Lovely to have you here.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Terra Nova Earth Talks. For more information on the content and links from this podcast, go to the Terra Nova website. That's terranova.foundation. To listen to other interviews in this series, go to the Plains FM website. That's plainsfm.org.nz. Search for Terra Nova Earth Talks. Also on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Bye for now.